This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to you. Your Chicago White Sox are still in first place after the Cleveland Guardians fell apart last night. I say that, of course, because last night after we were wrapping up the White Sox postgame show here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago, the White Sox had fallen a half game back with the Guardians leading over the Brewers. But boy, oh boy, that game went sideways on the Guardians quickly as the Brewers went on and handled them last night. And so we wake up yet again, rip another page off of the calendar, and the White Sox are still in first place despite losing last night. But first things first, I did promise you a starting pitcher when we wrapped up last night because the White Sox were still running through what they wanted to do, and it looks like we're going to have a bullpen game today. Good news, though, Sean Newcomb is going to open for the White Sox today. I say good news because, of course, he left from his last appearance against the Yankees after taking a line drive off of his left shoulder, his throwing shoulder. Of course, Will Venable said it was precautionary when it happens, and the good news is that, obviously, he must be feeling well because he's going to take the ball and open for the White Sox today against the Tigers as they send Troy Melton to the mound to square off against the White Sox. So I'm Jeff Mellor, and as I usually like to do when we reconvene on White Sox Weekly, I like to recap what happened this past week, the last time we were here. And last Saturday, the White Sox, you'll recall, were hosting the Dodgers, and boy, even though the White Sox did not win last Saturday, we certainly got a taste of some really good baseball as the World Series MVP was on the mound for the Dodgers, and he certainly showed the White Sox and everybody in baseball why he's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball.
The 2-2 pitch. He struck him out swinging on a fastball at 96. Outfield around toward left against Braden. And this time he's out for looking on a splitter. Well, I'll tell you, early on, Connor, Yamamoto seems to be placing the ball right where he wants to. Another 2-2. And a swing and a miss on a ball for strike three.
Swing and a miss. Yamamoto gets him. Fourth strikeout for the Dodgers starter.
Another 1-2. And a wave and a miss on a slider for strike three. That's five perfect innings for Yamamoto. The pitch. Foul tip, strike three. It was a cutter, and he's got his sixth strikeout.
2-2. Swing and a miss. Breaking ball, got him. That is the seventh strikeout for Yamamoto. Here it comes. Vargas hits one hard to left. It'll hang up there. Call makes the catch, headed down to a knee. He came up there at 98, did Yamamoto, saving some of that high velocity for late in the ballgame. Pitch counts at 88 for the Dodgers starter. He's been untouched. 3-2. Fly ball left side. Muncy over from third toward the tarp and will make the catch on the track. Yamamoto remains perfect.
He did. He remained perfect as he carried a perfect game into the eighth inning when future Hall of Famer Mookie Betts let down his starter.
The 1-1. Hit on the ground to the shortstop. Betts boots it, and Mydroff reaches. Boy, that was pretty routine. The no-hitter will be intact, but the perfect game bid has been lost. Wow, this crowd is stunned.
As is the case oftentimes when a pitcher in a groove has a hiccup like that, things can unravel. Now, when I say unravel, certainly the White Sox were not going to be in position to win this one because at that moment they were trailing 7-0. But Tristan Peters, what a find. We'll let you hear from him later in White Sox Weekly as he joined Mark Silverman and Jonathan Hood here on the flagship station earlier this week. But Tristan Peters in the ninth to break up Yamamoto's no-hitter.
The pitch. There's a blast deep right, and it is gone, a home run, a leadoff homer. And for the second time in two seasons, Yamamoto has a no-hitter broken up in the ninth inning by a home run, and it's 7-1.
That's how Saturday's game would end. You just tip your cap to Yamamoto because he was brilliant, and of course, he is one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and so no shame. The White Sox had good at-bats. He just had his best stuff, and the encouraging reason to look at that game and be able to say, you know what, no harm, no foul, because the White Sox found a way to win the series against the Dodgers in what I continue to say was a big litmus test in terms of the gauntlet that they had to run through the previous four series that they had to go up against some of the best, basically the best teams in all of baseball. And they bounced right back Sunday afternoon to take the series from the Dodgers when they exploded for a sixth run, sixth inning.
Gets the sign. His 0-2 is hit in the air out into right. This is a game tying homer. Boy, Sam was not happy with himself after that failed ABS challenge. And on the very next pitch, he just hit one 415 feet, his second career blast, and the first one over the fence.
So they tied it up. Miguel Vargas reaches via walk, and then Andrew Benintendi. Big week for him starting last Sunday.
There's a swing and a base hit. Right field corner. Vargas will jog around third and score. Benintendi's got a double. Sox lead 2-1.
Speaking of weeks, how about this cat?
Swinging a fly ball out into right. Kyle Tucker will watch it go. A two-run blast. Colson Montgomery. It's 4-1.
Certainly felt comfortable at that point, but good thing that Chase Meidroth was not going to let that lead be the only thing White Sox add on.
The 1-1, and he hits a fly ball out into deep right. Tucker back. He's at the fence. It's gone. Chase Meidroth with an opposite field two-run homer, and they are pouring it on. 6-1.
As I noted, it was a good thing that they did because the White Sox had to hold off that vaunted Dodgers lineup, and they did. They ended up winning 6-4. Sir Anthony Dominguez picks up his 12th save last Sunday, and the White Sox beat the Dodgers and won their eighth straight series at Wrigley Field against the best team in baseball in the LA Dodgers, who, by the way, were not the best team in baseball when they came in to Wrigley Field because the Braves were, but the White Sox apparently have put the Braves in a bit of a funk because they are no longer the best team in baseball. So we have the White Sox taking care of business at home. Now, this week has not gone nearly as well. Starting on Tuesday against the Yankees, of course, the White Sox went in to Yankee Stadium carrying a 7-game losing streak. Andrew Benintendi wanted to do his best to try and end and snap that streak in the series opener.
A 1-2, and there's a swing and a high fly ball out into deep right center field. It's way back there, and it's going to go. It's 1-0 in the first. Andrew Benintendi with number...
The good feelings would quickly dissipate on Tuesday night as the Yankees would hit up the Sox for a barrage of Bronx bombs.
Swing and a blast, right field, and it ties the game into the second level. Spencer Jones with his second home run and his first career homer in this ballpark, and it's 1-1 in the second. Swing and a fly ball, well hit to right, and that will get on out of here. At the facing of the second level for Ben Rice. That is his 20th. And it's now 7-1. There's a swing and a towering shot left field, and it is a home run for Goldschmidt to make it 9-1.
And that game, my friends, would end 12-2. Yankees take the opener from the White Sox and put them on an 8-game losing streak at that point. And it quickly turned into 9 as the Yankees thumped the White Sox the next evening, Wednesday.
There's a swing and a fly ball out into deep right. Montgomery back, and he's out of room. It is a 2-run homer for Cody Bellinger. Number 11 for Bellinger, and it's 2-0 Yankees in the first.
Now, the Yankees would add on quite a bit more, and at one point it was 4-0, which meant the White Sox were going to have to do their best to try and come back, and Colson Montgomery did his best.
There's a swing and a fly ball out into right. It's back there. It is gone! Well, they're right back in it. A 3-run blow. Colson Montgomery, and they're within a run.
But that Yankees lineup is littered with future Hall of Famers.
The 1-1. Hit in the air. That's trouble. Deep right, and it's a 3-run home run for Paul Goldschmidt. And it's 9-3.
Now, this next guy, not a future Hall of Famer yet, but he is certainly a perennial all-star in Jazz Chisholm.
Swinging a fly ball, well hit out into right, and it's a home run. So Richards' stretch of scoreless innings is over. Leadoff homer by Jazz Chisholm. So he's in the double digits. I guess he's a 10-20 guy now. It's 10-3 Yankees.
Of course, you heard me play the Colson Montgomery home run earlier in the game. He added on with his first career multi-homer game in the big leagues.
But Blackburn is an ex-starter. There's a swing and a fly ball, pretty well hit out into deep right center field. Bellinger back, and it's a home run. Colson, with his second home run tonight, has supplied all the runs for the White Sox. It's 10-4.
And I have more on Colson Montgomery and the rarefied air that he's keeping right now. He's truly becoming a superstar across baseball that maybe not enough people are recognizing just yet. But I think we're getting to the point where very soon he's going to be thought of as one of the best young players in all of baseball, not just on the White Sox. Now, Sam Antenacci, he's showing a little bit of pop these days.
Pitch. Hit in the air, a ton to right, and that baby will go. Sam Antenacci with his third major league home run. It's 10-5.
Now, the White Sox would lose that game, which meant they were on a 9-game losing streak at Yankee Stadium, and they had one more opportunity to end the skid, and Colson Montgomery picked up right where he left off Thursday night.
Nothing. And there's a swing and a drive out into right center, and he's done it again. Into the Yankee bullpen, number 20 for Montgomery, and it's 1-0 Sox in the second.
All right, so Colson Montgomery with his second 20 home run season now, as he hit 21 last year in his rookie year. Montgomery hit his 20th home run last season in his 247th at bat. This season, he hit his 20th home run in his 254th at-bat. So already we're seeing remarkable consistency. But did you know that Colson Montgomery is the only player in history to hit 20 home runs within his first 275 at-bats in each of his first two MLB seasons? You know, and if you just want to do a little bit of projecting here, generally, most players, they play a full season, right? They're going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 at-bats. So you see right there, Montgomery, the way he's pacing, he's showing you that he has legit 40 home run power. Of course, you know, you always hit some down moments during a season. They occasionally happen. But at the same time, Montgomery has been remarkably consistent when it comes to the power categories. And I think we are seeing that the White Sox may have a bona fide, excellent defender at shortstop who also has the versatility to play third base, who can give you 40 homer pop at the age of 24. Like I said, burgeoning superstar across baseball, not just on the White Sox. So Ryan McMahon would tie it up with a home run of his own, and that meant that the White Sox were going to have to grind their way to a victory. And eventually they did when Will Venable found himself in a game of chess with Aaron Boone in the eighth inning with the bases loaded. Venable summoned Andrew Benintendi to counter Boone's move of Camilo Duvall from the bullpen, and Benintendi did not miss.
They're back in the middle for two. Benintendi with a fly ball out into right. It's a grand slam. And oh, I got a story for you, partner.
Wow. Went up there looking for a strike, and he definitely did not miss the fastball right down the middle.
I was going to tell it before the at bat, but I waited. I ran into Andrew in the clubhouse as I was walking out after the manager show, and I passed him and I said, "Have you been outside?" He said, "No, why?" I said, "Oh, the wind is howling." He goes, "In or out?" I said, "Straight out." He goes, "Good night to hit."
And Sean Burke would finish it off. White Sox would snap their losing streak at Yankee Stadium at 9 games, go on to win that game 5-1. And, of course, Andrew Benintendi with another big home run for the White Sox, another big late-inning home run for the White Sox. And it just continues to be a season where there are all of these unforgettable moments. Don't forget, maybe the most, when I say unforgettable, the one that actually has slipped people's mind a little bit because there have been so many great thrilling moments in terms of walk-off home runs. Don't forget about Andrew Benintendi's 3-run homer in Arizona earlier this year when the White Sox were still kind of trying to prove what type of team they were. And in a 1-1 ball game, the White Sox relied on their veteran to hit a 3-run homer to break up the tie. And the White Sox would go on to win that game and the series. And for me, that was a moment where it felt like the White Sox were proving they were a little bit more than maybe people expected them to be. And now we've really seen that more and more often throughout the season. 312-332-3776. That's the number, folks, if you want to talk some White Sox with me here on ESPN 1000. We now set the stage for yesterday's affairs. We had ourselves an interesting verbal altercation, which I want to dive into because that became a subject of conversation amongst people inside the clubhouse after the game. But before that, we do that, we'll take a quick timeout. Sox fans, be at Raitt Field on Friday, June 26th, as the White Sox take on the Royals at 6:40. Then stick around after the game for a post-game concert featuring Marshmello, presented by Minute Maid Spiked. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. All right, when we come back, we'll dive into Tarek Skubal yelling at Mike Vassell as he walks off the mound right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Stream the games live on the ESPN Chicago app.
The 1-2. Swing and a miss on a changeup. Skubal is pointing. Oh, boy. Skubal is really letting the White Sox dugout have it. I think Mike Vassell screaming with Skubal.
Absolutely.
And he's still yelling at the White Sox dugout.
Yep.
And Skubal now trying to get back onto the field. He went into the dugout, and his catcher had to hold him back. Well, we've got some frayed nerves here.
Last night at Comerica Park, Tarek Skubal, none too pleased with Mike Vassell, and he let him know about it. Just another reason, White Sox fans, why you might have disdain for the Tigers. We asked a Twitter poll question earlier this season, which division rival do you hate the most? I voted for the Tigers. That goes back to the brawl in April of 2000 when Bobby Higginson couldn't restrain himself and quite a dust up at what was then the New Comiskey Park, U.S. Cellular at that point, but nevertheless, Raitt Field now. Yeah, I still have disdain for the Tigers from that brawl. And last night, Tarek Skubal did White Sox fans, well, he certainly did not endear himself in any way due to that little altercation. So last night, Will Venable was asked what the heck was going on.
You know, really have to ask them. You know, everything that Mike does, everything that we do on our bench is inward. It's above board. My guess is that there's some thought that there's some sign stealing or something potentially. I don't know. You have to ask them. But, you know, everything that we do is above board and really about our guys and, you know, supporting our guys and nothing more.
Do you, I guess, say anything to them to settle things down, or how do you handle that situation to move on?
No, just, you know, talking to the umpires at that point. You know, we had two umpires coming over and talking to us. No one talking to their side when, you know, it was their guy on the mound that, you know, was yelling and causing a scene. So for us, you know, we were just trying to get through it, explain to them that there was nothing going on and didn't really know what the problem was. But, again, that's for them. That's their problem. And, again, you know, for us, you know, we do everything the right way. Mike is a big part of this group and really just out there supporting his guys.
Mike Vassell weighed in. Obviously, he was taking the brunt of Scooble's ire.
It was, you know, good, clean fun. You know, just two teams competing.
How did it unfold from your perspective?
You know, I was just up there on the top step and helping the team out, you know, cheering along. And then next thing I know, I'm getting, you know, reamed out. So
what did he say to you?
I think it was some pretty choice words. And then I shared back some choice words, and it was good stuff.
Was it, Will said it might have been something about sign stealing? They thought you might have been sign stealing? Or?
Yeah, look, you know, like I've always said, I'm going to help the team and do everything I can to do it. So, you know, I'm going to be with the guy in the box. And, you know, I think we've seen far worse things before in the game. So, if you know, we're going to be that paranoid about it, it's just part of the game.
Did any part of you, like, interpret him as, like, trying to fire up his side or you? Maybe create something for momentum.
Was he trying to fire the
Scooble or anything like that?
I don't know if he was trying to fire up their side. Some pretty targeted towards me, but yeah. You know, look, I'm just a guy.
Had you said anything before that inning, or no?
No, he hadn't. You know, we started to get on base, and like I said, people get paranoid. So
it seemed like everybody else was kind of having your back.
Yeah, these guys are best. You know, they're my teammates, and they're always gonna have my back. So yeah.
I mean, next inning, Perez homers, and you have the Wizard hat on, so it seemed like you guys kept business as usual.
Yeah, it was a pretty good chain of events there, yeah.
It was. How can you not love Mike Vassell? True leader inside that clubhouse, and he is beloved by his teammates. Unfortunately, despite Junior Perez hitting his first career home run, a bloop double by Kerry Carpenter proved to be the difference as the Tigers beat the White Sox 4-3. White Sox going to have to win two in a row in Detroit if they're going to take this series before they come back home. Hey, grab your friends and head to the park, speaking of home, for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get one ticket and two beers starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com/brews. Mike Huff's going to join me here in a moment, but before we do that, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, former White Sox player Mike Huff, now the man who heads all of White Sox summer camps, joins me next. If you're looking for something for your kids to do, get them more involved and some teaching about baseball, if you need them to be brought up to speed, Mike Huff's going to tell us how you can make your plans now, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games on the go, the ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox in Motown today for two more games before an off day on Monday, and then they return home this week for six games over a seven-day homestand. White Sox lost last 4-3. Tough one. Bloop double by Kerry Carpenter proves to be the difference in a game that I thought we were going to have another game, another standalone name. We were going to call it the Junior Perez game, as the rookie picked up not just his first big league hit, but also broke a tie for the White Sox, making it 3-2 before Kerry Carpenter, our old nemesis, who always seems to have the White Sox number, a bloop double ends up being the difference in that ball game. And of course, a lot of conversation today, last night, about the dust up between Tarek Skubal. I should say verbal altercation, not actual dust up, but the verbal altercation by Tarek Skubal as he walked off the mound, and certainly gave Mike Vassell inside the White Sox dugout a piece of his mind. But nevertheless, your Chicago White Sox are still in first place after the Guardians dropped one to the Astros last night. And it is my pleasure right now to welcome on in the director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox. He's been doing that for a long, long time. Before that, he was playing baseball for the White Sox, and he knows a thing or two about the majors. Mike Huff joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Mike, I want to bring you in and just ask you, how much fun has this season been as a White Sox fan, watching them develop before our eyes so quickly, probably a lot faster than I think even Chris Getz and his front office believed was possible?
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much for having me on, Jeff. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm sure for Sox fans brings back lots of memories of years and teams in the past that you always hope, but you never really know how young talent is going to react when they get to the major leagues. You always hope, but you never really know how they're going to blend and mesh as a team, knowing you have so many different people coming from so many different backgrounds. And it has been extremely fun to see Chris being able to bring in people to the front office that are from outside sort of the White Sox family, and bring different thoughts, methods, technologies, and see it all come together. And I think you're right. I think it does feel a little bit like San Antonio in the basketball world, maybe a year early. But it's really, really fun, obviously, and very neat seeing it come together and taking on the better teams in the league and going toe-to-toe with them.
Mike Huff joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Mike, do you have a favorite moment so far from this year? Because we've had so many thrilling ones. Of course, just this past week, Andrew Benintendi with the pinch hit grand slam that helps the White Sox end a 9-game losing streak at Yankee Stadium. We had, of course, Edgar Caro's walk-off home run at Wrigley Field to give the White Sox the series against the Cubs. We had Miguel Vargas's walk-off home run against the Tigers on a Friday night when the White Sox lost Munetaka Murakami to an injury, and Vargy comes up big in that moment and helps, you know, show his leadership for the team. We've also got Braden Montgomery with a walk-off home run in his big league debut, something that only four other players in the history of the league had ever done. You know, I just rattled off four, and it seems like, you know, we're not even halfway through the season. Any moments stand out for you so far this year, Mike?
Well, I think you forgot about a rookie pitcher coming up, and after a leadoff home run, it's like, now we're just going to put up zeros for the next six innings. It's hard not to go against Caro and winning the series against the Cubs, especially when you think about what Peters did, you know, two innings before his first, you know, major league home run that you felt like put you up to win the game and win the series. And then Edgar comes through. I think you're right. I think for every fan, depending on what you really gravitate toward, there were some incredible defensive plays. There's been some incredible pitching moments. There's been some incredible base hit and home run type moments. So I think for every fan, you would probably find, just like you rattled off, at least a half dozen that at this point of the year, people could say, that was my favorite of the year. And that's what really proved to me that this is a team that isn't just continuing to get better. And I have to say, I kind of thought, you know, 15 games more this year than last year, which gets you into the mid-70s. And I think the fact that the Sox were the team that took the flyer on Mooney, that has been probably the biggest change in this team and clubhouse that has allowed people like Colson Montgomery and Miguel Vargas just to kind of say, hey, we now have someone that's been brought being paid to hit home runs. So we don't have to do that, even though we kind of feel like we have to do that. But I'm not getting paid for that. He's getting paid for that. So now everybody else around Mooney can relax, play their game. I think Will has done an incredible job of putting people into positions of success. And to me, that goes back to, you know, yesteryear, Jeff Torborg with the White Sox, Cito Gaston for me with the Blue Jays, that just found ways to put people in a position of success, not a position of, we'll see what happens. But, I think it's been an incredible year so far. And to think we have so much more, not just this year, but going forward, to be excited about if you're a Sox fan.
No, it's a great point. And I love that you bring up Munetaka Murakami. You know, he's obviously missed a couple weeks now, but because of what he was able to do from the outset, you're absolutely right. I think it took a little bit of pressure off of guys like Colson Montgomery and Miguel Vargas, where they could just go out and focus on their game. And, you know, they saw Murakami. I think the other thing, too, that might be other people, Mike, might not be witness to, but something that I'm sure you get a chance to see from time to time. You know, I obviously cover the clubhouse at home games, so I see it occasionally. Just the work that Munetaka Murakami puts in, setting that example, I think that goes a long way, too, to showing a lot of the younger players, you know, how you work to become a productive major league player. And that can't be underestimated either. And then it just feeds into itself, right? When he goes down, the entire team has built up this confidence where they're like, you know what? We can pick him up. We can do our thing in his absence. And now we're just seeing the entire team kind of, you know, it's a team game. I'm sure this is something you guys talk about at the camps, right? Like, you want to go ahead and do your thing for your, you know, you want to be able to be productive for yourself, but ultimately it's a team game and everybody around you has to do their job.
Yeah, that one for the camps especially. Thanks for bringing that up. We try very hard to say to the kids, you know, to be successful as a team, every team has a 1-2-7-8-9 hitter. It's not just your 3-4 hitters that help you win or lose. It's the 1-2-7-8-9. So do your job, do your role, do the little things to get on base, to help, you know, take an out away, make a great defensive play. Do those types of things because that's going to help a team win and you are going to feel more involved, not just sit back and say, oh, well, it's our number 3-4 hitters and they're the ones that have to do it for us. And I think you brought up a great point also with Mooney that I don't think people recognize how good our defense has been across the infield. I mean, Montgomery, Mydrock, Miguel. There's a couple errors, but it's not like years past that there was a lot of talented players, but there were a lot of errors. This year, you can also see the pitchers so much more comfortable throwing the ball over the plate, knowing it's going to get picked, double plays are going to get turned, and the innings and games are going to have 27 outs, not 30 outs for the other team.
No, that is so true. Absolutely. Mike Huff joining me here on White Sox Weekly. So tell the listeners a little bit, Mike, about, you know, the White Sox camps. Obviously, we are, you know, basically at the start of summer now. School's out for, you know, most people out there. And the White Sox have always done a great job now. 4 years, I know you've been heading, youth baseball for the White Sox for a while now. And what's going on if people are looking for something for their kids to keep them busy and also to get better at baseball? How do they go about signing them up for a White Sox camp?
Well, it's very fun. Ironically, we are getting ready to start another week. This will be our fourth week of camps. We're going to have 10 weeks of them all through the Metroplex, north, like the Schaumburgs, the Glen Ellens, as far west as the Yorkvilles, in northwest Indiana, a handful of camps in the city. Only $165, and it's a mornings or afternoons, and it's so much fun. 5 to 12-year-olds. These are the youngsters. These are the little leaguers. These are the ones that we're teaching which hand to put the glove on. But first couple days, pretty heavy with instruction and some games. The last couple days, a lot more games, building progressively through catching, through hitting, ground balls, fly balls, base running, all types of fun stuff. And it's as simple as whitesox.com/play. And whether you're in the city, a near ring suburb, or even far, like I said, northwest, west, south, we're at 2,600 kids at this point. Mm-hmm. Still plenty of room in camps. And hopefully there's one, if not in your town, very close. So for the little ones, and again, we get Sox tickets, a hat, a T-shirt, a fun goodie bag full of all kinds of Sox swag. And then for those that are a little older, a little more advanced, we've got our travel teams. We know about the ACE kids in the inner city. But we have the White Sox elite teams out in the suburbs that will be hosting tryouts for those. And this is 13 through 17. These are like the middle and high school kids.
Yes.
We'll host them at Bennett Academy the week of July 13th, 14th, and 15th. The fun part about that is obviously pretty selective. We're not going to have 40 teams all over the Metroplex. We're just going to have a couple at each age level. And Jim Adusi, who played in the major leagues like myself, he runs it. He's going to be stepping back a little bit. Mike Madsen, one of his proteges, will be taking over to the day-to-day. Jim is still going to be a part of it. Dan Pasqua, teammate of mine, the Certainly. Hammer, who still looks like he can hit a baseball 500 feet. He's a part of working with the hitters. Myself, again, not quite the hitter that either of those guys were, but I love working with the outfielders and the kids on base running and bunting the little things.
The fundamentals, Mike. You're the fundamentals guy, right? You need those.
Exactly. You need that role player here and there. So
listen, the fundamentals, they're fundamental for a reason. And they're, you know, I can't tell you how many post-game callers I've taken who are upset about the lacking of good fundamentals from time to time. Nothing drives, I think, a fan or even, you know, a parent crazier when they watch, you know, the basic stuff. Like, hey, it's always like you give the efforts there, but it's like the little things. Come on, we got to take care of those.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the thing that we pride the most within the White Sox organization. Both Anthony Olivo with the ace kids and Jim and Mike Madsen with our elite kids. The goal is truly to help them be able to understand the game at sort of a professional level, to help these kids make their high school teams, to make sure all these kids are going on to college, and whether they want to play baseball or not, we know we're setting them up for success, whether they're playing baseball or not. And that's just, it's a different type of satisfaction. Last night I was actually at a Schaumburg Boomer game where two of our players, through the years, Anthony and Alex Calarco, were having bobbleheads because they're both playing for the Boomers. Anthony had a chance to play professionally, didn't make it to the majors. Alex, a couple injuries has prevented him from playing organized ball. But to see them go through a Northwestern university and get their degrees and knowing that they're going to be successful in life, and this is kind of a fun way for the two of them to get to play together sort of one last time, it's pretty neat and special.
Pretty cool. Mike Huff, one last time for anybody who's listening, if they're looking for something, if you need, you know, you got a little one out there, age 5 to 12, or as you mentioned, those older, where can they go if they want to set themselves up for a camp? Obviously, I believe there's now up to 47 communities that you guys go around to. So again, one more time, how do they go about it?
It's just whitesox.com/play, and you will find the different icons, one for the travel player, one for the in-house and summer camps. Just click that, especially for the summer camps. You'll see a whole map of the city pop up with Sox logos. Find the one closest to you or one that might be, you know, a 10, 15-minute drive if that works better for the family schedule.
Beautiful. Mike, as always, you know what? Before I let you go, Mike, what day do you teach the kids how to challenge for the ABS calls?
Oh, that is, we try to build up to that.
Okay.
So that's typically
that's the more advanced camp.
We work on tapping the helmet. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, gosh, yes. We got to get that done.
What have you thought of that so far as a former major leaguer?
Again, as a former major leaguer who played an era where I heard too many umpires yell at me like, Mike, he hit the glove. I'm like, the glove's in the other batter's box. I don't care. It's not a strike. I love it, and I love the fact that it is very expedited in nature, that you have to make the call right away as a catcher or hitter, and it's very quick. It takes such little time. I actually really love it.
Well, we love having you on, Mike, as always, and we love that you are the head of youth baseball for the White Sox. So keep on doing what you're doing, and I'm sure we will talk again soon.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks so much, guys.
My pleasure. Again, that's Mike Huff, and again, if you want to go ahead and sign up again. Learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp. $165. Kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a four-day baseball camp. Campers receive that Sox swag bag that Mike was talking about with a White Sox branded compression arm sleeve, two tickets for a 2026 White Sox home game, and more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com /camps. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, and the White Sox lineup has been extremely productive this season as they are amongst the league leaders in home runs, top 10 in runs scored, and they've done this all in the absence of one of their key cogs who looks like he might be on his way to the big leagues fairly soon. I'll tell you about that coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays, noon to 2, ESPN Chicago.
Didn't give us a third choice because it would have been 100%, right? Add and keep.
Exactly.
We want it all. Yeah.
Black or whites.
Well, the only way you can do both is, yeah, you pick up talent and trade away stuff that's not considered prospects.
Or,
good luck.
There are creative ways to do things, and no doubt this front office is looking at every potential way to supplement the roster. This is, I won't speak for Chris and his front office, but this is a real challenging time of year because they're in draft mode too.
Yep.
They're trying to win games on a daily basis in the big leagues, and they have an enormous draft coming up with the first pick.
That was earlier this week, a couple days ago actually, when we asked the White Sox Twitter poll question at the trade deadline. Would you rather see the White Sox move a top-end prospect and be buyers, or would you rather them stand pat and hang on to those prospects? And maybe somewhat surprising, at least to me, 61% want to keep those top prospects and stand pat. I found that a little bit interesting. I was just perhaps a little bit surprised. Maybe that's an indication of how much confidence White Sox fans have right now in their front office to develop younger players and produce impact players when they arrive at the big league, something that has not always been the case for the White Sox, but recently seems like everybody who arrives in the majors is ready to go and ready to contribute. And that has been extremely encouraging. I will also notes that the White Sox, who are still in first place, as I mentioned to begin the show today, at 39-35. And I'll go back to something Mike Huff mentioned when I was just talking with him, how what a season it has been for the White Sox. You know, and I think Mike said, you know, he was thinking in his head, you know, when the season began, maybe, you know, 15 game improvement to get them somewhere in the neighborhood of mid 70s. And I think, honestly, if you've been around baseball as long as Mike Huff has, you know, I've been covering baseball for a while now. You know, I've seen a lot of baseball. You know, a 15-game improvement is substantial. And when you couple the fact that the White Sox had also improved by 19 games, almost 20 wins the year before, those are two pretty dramatic leaps to take moving forward. And right now for the White Sox, 4 games above 500 as we approach the midway point of the season, and also, you know, tied for first place, a percentage point ahead of the Guardians right now on June 20th. I mean, that is quite a statement the White Sox have been able to make here in the early going. And as I noted when we were heading to break, they've done this without, I think, one of their brightest young players. I'm talking, of course, about Kyle Teal, who made his second rehab start last night for the Charlotte Knights. And that game, Kyle Teal made quite a bit of noise as he went 5-for-6. That's right, 5-for-6. Looks like Kyle Teal, in terms of swinging the bat, is in a pretty good groove. He homered in his first rehab game. And last night he played 9 innings. That's something that Will Venable noted yesterday. They were going to let him go a full game and see how the body recovers. So, you know, the next big step is to find out today how Kyle Teal felt after playing 9 innings. Is he, don't be alarmed if he's not back in the lineup for Charlotte today. They may just give him that day of rest today and just see how sore he is as he tries to get back. But the bat looks like it's ready. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Kyle Teal, as long as he recovers well here from, you know, the logging the innings, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back in the White Sox lineup. And as I noted, you know, at the end of the season, I know you ask some people inside the White Sox organization, as good a season as Colson Montgomery had last year, as good as a season as Chase Meidroth had last season, entering, or at least at the end of last year, a lot of people looked at Kyle Teal and thought he could be the biggest star. And the White Sox have done what they've done without him playing a single game so far this year. And not just offensively, but what his ability as a framer and what he can do behind the plate. They are very excited about him, and getting him back will be, I think, a significant boom for this lineup here. And I think the White Sox, you know, part of the reason maybe people are weighing in saying, no, Stan Pat, don't give up some of your good young players at the trade deadline, is because they're looking at the, you know, the players that are going to be added back to the lineup in a Kyle Teal, in a Munetaka Murakami, and how productive they might just end up being. Maybe it's because somebody like Tristan Peters, who the White Sox have found and unearthed and turned into a real nice, productive player, is somebody who White Sox fans feel like has solidified the center field spot. Well, Mike Hoff mentioned how Tristan Peters hit that big home run in the Cubs game that Edgar Caro eventually walked off. Well, Tristan Peters was also formerly and somewhat famously a Savannah Banana. And he joined Mark Silverman and Jonathan Hood earlier this week and talked about that and just the confidence he's been able to build playing on the White Sox so far this season. So when we come back, we'll let you hear from Tristan Peters as he joined us earlier this week here on the flagship station ESPN Chicago. Join us for $5 Tuesdays. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, including draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett Popcorn, Stadium Buttery, Vienna Beef Hot Dogs, Polis Sausages, Beggar's Pizza, Nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. When we come back, we'll let you hear that interview with Tristan Peters right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
The pitch. There's a blast deep right, and it is gone. A home run. A leadoff homer. And for the second time in two seasons, Yamamoto has a no-hitter broken up in the ninth inning by a home run, and it's 7-1.
Tristan Peters breaking up Yoshinobu Yamamoto's no-hitter last Saturday at Wright Field. He has been excellent so far this season. I think better than even Chris Getz. I know better than even Chris Getz and his team believed he could be, because I asked Chris Getz the last time he met with the media. I asked him specifically, have you been surprised by how productive Tristan Peters has been at the plate? And he was like, yes, we have been surprised. We knew he could, you know, pick it, play some good defense in center, but as productive as he has been as a hitter has been the real find, hitting .285 on the season, .348 on base, and then a little bit of a surprising slug in .435. That is a .784 OPS, folks. That is an OPS plus of .118. That's 18% better than your average center fielder, and two wins above replacement already, less than halfway through the season. That is amazing production in center field that the White Sox did not necessarily count on. So he has been a real find. Tristan Peters joined Mark Silverman, Sylvie, and Jonathan Hood on Wednesday of this week. And, you know, they delved into his baseball journey and how he got to where he is now.
Yeah, so I grew up in Canada, moved out west in Canada for 2 years, just for my last 2 years of high school. And then I went to Chandler Gilbert Community College for 2 years, one of them being COVID year. And then I got recruited by SIU and a couple other schools, went on a visit there and really liked the campus and stuff and town. So I decided to commit to SIU and had that 1 year there in 2021.
To all of the things that you've gone through to get to this moment right now, you're calling us from Yankee Stadium. What does this mean for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, it's super cool. I remember coming here when I was 16. I didn't even watch a game. Back then, they were my favorite team. I loved the stadium. And so it's really cool to be back here and actually being able to play on this field.
What do you attribute to your ascension here and to the greatness that you have brought to this White Sox team?
Yeah, I mean, we got an incredible coaching staff. We got an incredible team, really, just players. Just the enmeshment, like, we mesh so well here, and we just have a good time. And I think that helps us play loose. And I think all our performances are in a positive trend because of that.
You know, and so you're playing with Tampa for a bit, and you're traded to the White Sox, who, you know, made news a year before that you got traded for, in futility, in 40-some wins in the game. So you had a perception of the White Sox maybe coming in. What was that when you came in, and when did you realize that, hey, this team is good?
Yeah, I think, obviously, those last couple of years, everybody knew about it, and you know what? That's part of baseball too. I knew that going in. There's struggles for teams, there's struggles for players. But once I got to spring training and got to really know the guys a few days in, just like you could just feel that there was something special there. Just a really special group of guys, good guys, and just really talented players, and a young team. And I think that's very exciting to see when you come into spring training.
Tristan, you are a Savannah Banana, and so we'd like to know the preparation to play ball as an entertainer and as a baseball player, clearly different than being a big leaguer. Tell us that process.
Yeah. So the coach, Gillum, he recruited me to play in 2021 after my season at SIU. I'd played against him in junior college, so that's kind of how our connection there. But one thing it really did for me was, like, bring the fun back into baseball, because I put a lot of pressure on myself and stuff in college, and I think it really kind of opened my eyes to, like, okay, we play for the fans, and this is what we're going to do. We're just going to have a fun time, no matter if we win or lose. You have a bad day or a good day, and I think that really helped me with my mentality towards baseball, and because it's a lot different than what we play now.
So yeah, I understand that. No, I want something a little deeper, Sylvie. I mean, that's a fine answer, a good boilerplate answer. But we want to know the seedy underbelly. We need to know, like, what are their meetings like? I mean, it's more than just baseball. It's entertainment. You got to set up with the dances and everything else. Tell us about the behind-the-scenes meetings that you have to be able to get prepared for that. Because, again, it's not like you as a White Sox, clearly.
Right, yeah. I mean, our meetings consisted of what our celebrations were going to be when we scored the first run, the second run, and the third run, and so on. And just if you weren't playing, you were kind of expected to entertain. And I did a couple dances in between them. I think it was the middle of the second inning or whatever. and so that was choreographed during BP, so we had that. The owner, Jesse Cole, he came up to us before we even played a game. He'd talk to us individually and just basically tell us their mission. And it was really just everything focused on fans first, and that was kind of the drive between or in our meetings and stuff like that.
See, that's good, Hoodie. That's a good question. And this has been a debate on our show. So we went with that for a while, Tristan, about, hey, like, that's the thing. Like, this is my guy from SIU. This is the guy who played for the Savannah Bananas. But then our guy, Tyler Aki, who is the executive producer of the show, he stepped in and he poured cold water on the whole thing about Savannah Bananas. And he said to us, no, this is just like a summer Cape Cod type of league where you're playing for the real Savannah Bananas baseball team, but you were on the Savannah Bananas that we know. You were doing the entertainment stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of at the time, it's not like it is now, but it was college summer league, but they still did all the aspects like that. It was kind of just, it was getting going and into what it is now. And we played one game of banana ball against an out of league team or whatever. But yeah, it's a completely different thing now, but we kind of set the roots for that.
Like when people bring that up to you, because I think that's like the number one headline about you. Are you like over it already, or are you just happy that people want to get to know you a little bit more?
No, I think I'm grateful for it. I mean, it's pretty cool to be known as that, and I'm proud to be a Savannah Banana. Have been a Savannah Banana. They're, I think what they're doing is special for the game, and it's different. I mean, the kids love it, and I think that's the future generation. So I think it's very important.
Who could do that on the White Sox team? Like, if you could take one guy that's cut out for it and that you're like, let's take him down there and he could do this too, who would it be?
Oh, there's no question, Mike Vassell. I mean, he's got the perfect personality to be a banana.
It's funny because I want to ask you about Vassell. I just want you – I don't know if you're a superstitious person. Could the White Sox be able to be this good without the magic wand?
I'm not superstitious, but I think it plays definitely into that, like, that enmeshment with the guys. I think we're so connected to each other and just we're best friends. And I think just having fun like that just helps us play loose. So I think, yeah, absolutely, it has a huge effect.
You see, you have to believe in the wand that Vassell has. You see that?
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean,
Murakami doesn't have the year he has without the wand, as you well know. He needs the wand. If you're right. The Rockies, if you don't have the wand, you should understand that, Tristan Peters. I mean, you're not a contender. You're not getting all this attention without the wand. So Vassell, there's the guy there. There's your MVP.
I love that.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when did the light go on for you in your personal journey? You know, you had your debut, I believe, with Tampa a year ago, and you know, it wasn't so easy. And then you watch a kid like Braden Montgomery come up and hit a walk-off home run in his first game. When did the light go on for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, my debut was a bit tough. I didn't get a hit last year at all. So that weighs on you in the offseason, too. But I think just getting to the big leagues was like, it's kind of a shock. You're like, oh, wow, this is different than the minor leagues. This is different than AAA. The pitching's better. So I think... once I made the team, I felt pretty confident in my abilities and how my spring went and that I could carry that through into the season. I mean, I had some early struggles too, but I feel like there's been an adjustment period too. And I honestly, that wasn't too long ago when I really started to feel confident in seeing these pitchers well. And I mean, I felt really confident against Garrett Cole last night too. I saw him well. And so it's just a learning thing. I think baseball's a game of adjustments.
Tristan, what is Will Venable like?
What is he like?
Yeah. What is he like as a person?
He's super chill. And obviously he'll show emotion every once in a while, like he did in Seattle. And I think he's got our backs, especially. Yeah, he knows when to do that and when not to. And I think he's an incredible manager, and the way he manages the clubhouse and just kind of, I think this special group of guys doesn't mesh as well without a leader like him.
Tristan, before we let you go, and we know you have a game tonight, we have a pregame coming up at 5:30. I want to introduce you to one of the biggest Sox fans we have at the radio station. Hannah LaMotta lives and dies White Sox.
Yes.
And she's a huge fan of yours. She is producing the show right now, and she would like to ask you a question, if that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Tristan.
Hannah?
Hey,
Hi, Hannah.
So I just wanted to ask about the environment at the rate this year. I was at the home opener when you hit the walk-off, and I kind of just want to know, what has it been like this year to play in the rate? And I know it's been electric as a fan, but as a player, it's got to feel even more special to have that, you know, that fan support and everybody backing you up.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, seeing those seats full of people is incredible. Just, it's an honor to play in front of all those people cheering for us too. I think that helps with our energy, and I think it helps us win. And I mean, I remember the Cubs series, just the way we showed out, and to be able to beat them at our home field was incredible. And I think that's in part to do with the fans.
Hannah, great job too, by the way. Another Sox fan, Aiden, at the radio station wants to start a campaign to get you into the All-Star game. Are you good with Sox fans stuffing the ballot box for Tristan Peters?
Heck yeah, absolutely. That'd be awesome.
And then,
would you like to make a pitch? You want to have a campaign speech? I mean, go ahead, Tristan. Why should you be in the All-Star game? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I bring something. I think I bring that grit to get there. And, you know, we need Sox in that All-Star game, too, especially starters. So get out there and vote.
I love that.
How about that?
Are you good with Banana Bonds is your nickname, too?
Yeah, I love it.
It's awesome.
There he is, Banana Bonds, Tristan Peters joining Sylvie and Hoodie earlier this week on ESPN Chicago. Obviously, he has been an excellent addition so far this season, playing, you know, I don't want to say gold glove caliber defense, but I think he's going to be in the conversation for a potential gold glove, especially if he gets to play enough. The only, you know, thing that might hold him back is because he occasionally will sit against lefties. You know, will he get enough games to be in that conversation ultimately? But he has been, even if he doesn't make it to the All-Star game in Philadelphia, he has been excellent for Chris Getz and his team so far this season, as he has been a real contributor that I don't think they necessarily were counting on. But now he feels like as long as there's a righty on the mound, he is going to be in the lineup. And that is the case again today. With a righty on the mound, he is in the White Sox lineup, which I will give you here shortly. But you heard him talk about that energy that they are feeding off of at Rate Field. Why don't you be a part of that? Create your own game plan with a 10-ticket flex pack. You pick the matchups and the seats. Total freedom, total fun. For more information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call or text 312-674-1000. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, I do want to touch on the latest proposal that was floated out by MLB, the owners, towards MLBPA, and how they'd like to potentially restructure not just the amateur draft, but also they'd like to put in place an international draft. I want to talk a little bit about that when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox fans, take advantage of savings all summer long with the Summer Savings Section. Score select lower-level tickets starting at $20 on weekdays and $25 on weekends. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. And the MLB owners proposed, or at least brought forth, a proposal for the next CBA, as the current CBA expires on December 1st of this season. And the biggest point that the owners brought forth in this is a drastic overhaul of the game's amateur draft. And essentially, the biggest point here is that they want to institute an age limit where you would not be allowed to enter the MLB draft, the domestic draft, until you were in your sophomore year of college, 2 years removed from your high school graduation date. And why does that? And in addition to that, they want to reduce the current 20-round draft to 12 rounds. And the biggest point of contention here is, at least from my point of view, and why I think, and by the way, MLBPA came out swiftly, I think within about an hour of the proposal that was put forth, and definitely was not a fan of what was put out there. They slammed it pretty hard. And I think for me, the issue is, when you look at the idea of prohibiting 18-year-olds from entering the draft, or even, you know, in some cases, 17-year-olds, the issue for the union here is, when you look at, they're kind of fighting a two-front war, right? The MLBPA is resisting the idea of a salary cap. And obviously owners would like to put that in place. They're looking at pretty much all the other major sports here in America, and they see that they have cap systems, and they also understand how lucrative that could be for the franchise valuation, right? You look at baseball teams and what their perceived valuation is, and it would significantly increase the number if they can have a fixed cost in place for player salaries. And when they say, okay, well, the draft here, what we want to do, we see college baseball, we see NIL money, and this is a viable alternative. I think when you really delve in, you know, the cynic in me looks at it and says, well, I think you're offloading development costs, right? I think you look at low A, single A, and high A, and you say, well, baseball, it's not, minor league baseball is not profitable, but it certainly is a cost for major league owners. And the lowest levels of baseball in the minor leagues are obviously the least profitable. That probably is not surprising to most. But so are they kind of looking at a way of eliminating low A ball if they, you know, prevent high schoolers from coming into baseball and basically pushing them into college baseball? Now, you might say, well, that would make college baseball better. But the truth is, when you look at the way NIL money is distributed, college baseball receives a much smaller percentage. We're talking most elite schools in the SEC only give their college baseball programs, you know, maybe 5 or 10% of their NIL money because they have to distribute it amongst all of their sports. And you probably know where I'm going here. College football and college basketball get the vast majority of NIL money that most universities want to dole out. Now, that doesn't mean that the SEC doesn't pay their college programs well. The problem is, though, if you're pushing more high schoolers to go play college baseball doesn't do necessarily a great job of developing younger players. College baseball coaches are there to win baseball games for their college universities. And if an 18-year-old high school player who they recruit comes in and is not necessarily ready to contribute, I don't know how much they're going to play in college baseball. So you're probably going to see a lot of young players there. You're going to see their growth stunted. You know, when you talk about, you know, the youngest phenoms across baseball who actually were able to break into the majors at the age of 18 or 19. When you talk about guys like Ken Griffey Jr., Juan Soto, Alex Rodriguez, breaking through when they were 19 years old and almost making an immediate impact. And then within a year becoming stars, all-star caliber players, and then eventually MVP caliber players, you know, they're not going to have the opportunity to do that if you adopt this new MLB draft proposal. And so, and let's be honest, if you're just a casual baseball fan outside of your own team, what gets you more excited than watching the newest young phenom, you know, let you dream on the possibility that you're watching the next great potential Hank Aaron, you know, in their infancy? That's part of what people love about baseball that would not be available if the MLBPA were to even consider something like this. And then on the back ends, the cynic in me looks at this and says, well, if you can't enter the draft until you're 20, there's no chance under the current CBA, and obviously they'll rework it, but if you're still talking about 6 years of service time, or in some cases seven, if a player's doesn't, you know, he breaks in the mid, well, all of a sudden that player who could be potentially, you know, an elite player like a Juan Soto, when they reach free agency at the age of 26, well, now that guy is probably not going to be 28 until he hits free agency. And if you look at the big monster contracts that have been doled out, part of the reason that they've been so lucrative is because the players like Vladimir Guerrero or Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, they hit free agency when they were 26 years old. And you could still, as an executive, look at them and say, you know what? I'm still getting, for the most part, their best 3 or 4 years of their prime. and I want to pay for that. And that's the reason you see those exorbitant contract numbers in place at certain spots. It's because the younger players who hit free agency at the age they do. If this is adopted, those guys aren't hitting free agency until they're 28. And all of a sudden, those huge deals are going to come down. And it's just something that I think MLBPA has to strongly look at and say, you know, if we're even going to entertain the notion of this, then we'd like free agency after 4 years, just like the NBA has for their rookies or the NFL does, you know, first and second round picks. Let us hit free agency at 4 years, and then maybe it's a little bit more of an interesting conversation. Anyway, and the other point, though, is, you know, 18-year-olds being forced to go to college, that path is not great for every player. Some players it works great for. Others, they may just not be somebody who is, you know, into the idea of living the campus lifestyle. They might want to just get to playing baseball because they believe that, that's their future profession, and it might not be in their best interest. My two cents there on the latest proposal from the MLB owners. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Saturday, June 27th, as the White Sox take on the Royals at 3:10. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive an America's 250th homage t-shirt presented by Coca-Cola, or skip the lines and secure your promo at checkout with guaranteed promo. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Miguel Vargas joined Waddle and Sylvie earlier this week. I believe Tyler Aki was actually in for Waddle. And of course, I have been professing my love for Miguel Vargas as I believe the heartbeat of the White Sox. He is the emotional leader inside the clubhouse. He joined the Waddle and Sylvie show earlier this week, and I'm going to let you hear from him in a moment. Real quick, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Miggy on White Sox Weekly when we come back right here on ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The legendary AM 1000, the home of the Chicago White Sox.
Sox fans, join us at Wright Field for Nickelodeon Day on Sunday, June 28th, as the White Sox take on the Royals at 1:10 p.m. Receive a slime bucket hat when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability to purchase tickets and prepaid parking. Visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Miguel Vargas, rock the vote. Get Miggy into the All-Star game, folks. He clearly deserves it. He has been having a fantastic time this season. He joined Waddle and Sylvie, at least the Waddle and Sylvie show, Tyler Aki in for Waddle during this interview, and talked about how much fun this season has been.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, you know, by far is the most fun I have playing baseball in the big league. I think, you know, my whole career, you know, these guys are, you know, unbelievable. They've been unbelievable for me since day one. And, you know, I think then after last year, then we play, you know, a season together, and now we know each other more. You know, we put a lot of expectation on us since day one in spring training, and, you know, has been fun, has been great. I think we all want to push for each other, and that's the fun part about it, and, you know, has been amazing so far.
Miguel, how much different is the vibe in your clubhouse now versus when you got here in 2024?
You know, I think a lot of things changed at the time. You know, I feel right now we're really enjoying the game. You know, it's hard when you go out there and, you know, you don't have the result as a group than you want or do expect. And then it's hard to have fun, you know. And now we're winning games, and, you know, we expect to win, and everything is, you know, we together and winning games. Fans is showing up to the stadium, 30,000 every single day last week. And, you know, that's fun. That's fun to go and show up to the stadium and see all the fans and all the Chicago, you know, all Chicago fans coming to the game and enjoying with us.
Miguel Vargas joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. We hyped up the series against the Dodgers. And I saw that, you know, you were reconnecting with a lot of your former teammates and guys you came up with in the Dodger organization. Beating the Dodgers 2 out of 3 Is that, in your mind, worth more than just two wins because of who you beat for this team going forward?
I think for me it means more what it means for the whole team. I think the race that we have right now, winning a lot of games, and, you know, we expect to go and play good teams and, you know, beating them and winning a really good baseball against really good teams is what it means a lot for me and for the whole group. Playing with some of the old former teammates is always fun to go and compete against them and, you know, play a little bit with them. But, you know, definitely I'm here right now on the South Side loving playing baseball with my teammates and having a great time at the field.
Miguel, did any Dodger player or coach come up to you and tell you that they were proud of how well you're doing this year?
Yeah, for sure. Every time I see a lot of them, they're really close to me, especially Andy's, you know, my brother, and I'm also proud of him and what he all doing in LA. I'm happy for all they have done for these couple of years, and you know, it was fun to see them.
Miguel, you're still young. You're only 26, but I think only Benintendi is of the everyday players is older than you. Does that make you one of the leaders of this team?
Oh, definitely made me feel old right now, what you say. But, I just want to be out there for my guys. You know, they've been there for me. And, you know, that's what makes this team such a fun time to be around because, you know, we all push for each other. And, you know, I think a lot of young guys, they've been great. All the rookie has been great. They know what they do. And, you know, they show up every day and they play hard. And that's all we want to do. That we want to be that team to play hard every day and, you know, compete at the highest level.
When Mune went out with the injury, did you feel a sense that maybe you needed to even make your voice even louder and assume an even bigger role for this team? And obviously you delivered.
No, I mean, I don't think this team need that. I think, you know, we're good when we are a whole group, no individual guys. And that's I think, has been the whole key for this team. You know, it's not one guy or one particular guy who is going to, you know, take the lead. But, you know, obviously the whole group pushing for each other, and that's what makes it better. And, you know, especially we got a lot of veteran guys here like Richie, Benny. They have been, you know, in the league for plus 10 years. So, you know, having them around and, you know, having fun playing every day at the highest level is all we can ask for.
Miguel Vargas joining us from the White Sox. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Who's the craziest guy in the White Sox clubhouse these days, Miguel?
Oh, I know you guys can see that every single day. Mike Bosso, the clubhouse, that's the guy, you know, that's this guy is, you know, he's always loud. He's always, you know, having good time, and it's great having him around the clubhouse for sure. He hype up every single guy, and you know, he can be a little wild sometimes too. So, yeah, I think Mike Bosso for sure.
I think really, Miguel, that it's a great story because I don't know how many people have followed it closely outside of, you know, being a diehard Sox fan and people in the clubhouse. For Vassell to, you know, be injured, to be out all year, but to still be such a part of the team. How important is that? As goofy and crazy as it is, how important is that to keep things going like that?
Yeah, I think, like I said before, I think we is going both ways where, you know, he came here and, you know, he obviously out of for a year and here with a high energy feel that. And, you know, we got this guy out of the year and he still want to come here and winning games and be part of the group. You know, and he also to take that about and he has, you know, this good time as his process to recovery and get back for next year. And then, you know, that's the good part about this team. Like I said before, you know, you know, I know it sounds like I repeat the same thing, but, you know, the Hope Group is having a great time and is having unbelievable for sure.
As we talked at the start of the show, Miguel, you lead all American League third basemen in home runs and RBIs. You're second in OPS. You've played great defense as well. How much would it mean to you to be picked for the All-Star team?
I don't know. I just, you know, that's something that is out of my hand. I just want to go out there and be the best I can be. You know, every single day, you know, for sure, for me, it would be a dream to represent them, you know, the South Side in the All-Star game. And, you know, that's a dream that everyone wants to do, but, you know, that's something that I cannot control. And, you know, I don't want to overthink about it when I'm in the field, but obviously, you know, every time it's a goal that I want to reach for sure.
Yeah, and I think it would be one of the best stories. I think with or without the All-Star berth, Miguel, your story is already one of the better ones on the South Side. When you were first acquired, you didn't get the playing time in L.A., and then you got the playing time here, and you really struggled. But you've overcome that, becoming the player you are today. Did you ever question your abilities, or did your confidence ever waver, considering how you struggled in your first year with the White Sox?
I mean, yeah, 100%. I think, you know, every athlete has experienced that where, you know, you don't know what else to do. You don't get the result that you want every day. And, you know, more hard than you work hard every single day. And, you know, sometimes that's how sport it is. You know, you have to learn and you have to know that it's other people out there with the same talents as you, and they prepare hard as you. And, you know, sometimes you have to be stronger mentally to, you know, a little bit lie to yourself, you know, being sane to yourself every day, then you're good, and then you're going to be out here. And then, you know, I think the team gave me that opportunity, and they trusted me, you know, and that's something that I always got to be, very, proud or per se, yeah, for the team and, you know, for that opportunity. And, you know, I'm glad to represent the White Sox every day.
Yeah, and you do a great job with English as your second language. For people who aren't aware, Miguel, your dad was a great Cuban baseball player. You left the country, I believe, in 2017. Because none of us have been to Cuba. What was it like for you, the son of a great baseball player, growing up in Cuba? And how much of an impact did your dad make on your life?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, that was a great childhood for me. You know, watching all the city, loving the way my dad played baseball and the legend that he was for the whole city and what he means for the old people out there. You know, that means a lot for me. I'm very proud to be his son and, you know, obviously have his last name on my back every day in the big league. You know, I feel that he never had the opportunity to come here and show up his talent. And, you know, for me that now I had this opportunity, it's like something that we was both sharing at the same time. You know, he obviously helped me to, you know, being here today and be the baseball player that I am, and not just baseball player, but the person too. And, you know, I'm really proud of being his son and represent my whole family too.
Miguel, you had a solid year last year. This year, as we've talked, has been fantastic. Were there any small adjustments that you made? Is there anybody inside the White Sox organization that helped you make some of those adjustments that have allowed you to be so good this year?
You know, I think that the whole organization has been great since I'm here. You know, that's something that I really appreciate from everyone here. You know, especially the hitting coaches, Joel, Derek Chomo, they really made me believe on, you know, my swing this year, trust on myself. And, you know, so far we're having great time out there at the field. But, you know, I mean, when you have this group of guys, the energy and they want to win every single day, you just want to be part of the group. You know, you want to show up for them and be part of the group and have fun. So I think for me that was the mentality change when you see and every day this guy want to play and win games. You know, I just want to be part of it.
I was going to say, do you have a favorite moment personally this year? Was it the walk-off against the Tigers a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, definitely. That's the top one right there this year. You know, I got a couple too when we play in Miami. I hit a grand slam in front of my family out there, and we also win the first game of the year that day. And, you know, but definitely walk-off at home was number one for sure. And, you know, it means a lot for me. And for my whole family, they love it, and, you know, we all have fun.
Before we let you go, and we're talking to Miguel Vargas, it's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. We asked this to Davis Martin when we had him on a week or two ago. When did you realize that Mune Murakami was as good as he is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know we all expecting, like, he come and he 50 homer, but you know, when you see his work ethic every day, the way he prepared, you know, then this wasn't a coincidence. You know, this is not a coincidence. Everything happened for him. And then, you know, when obviously when he come come here, a lot of people have expectation. A lot of people say, oh, this is now the league, whatever. But, you know, when you see this guy prepare every day and you know, be the professional he is, you know, then a lot of special things got to happen. So, you know, I feel for us, is, you know, obviously we enjoy and it's unbelievable, but, you know, I think we all in this clubhouse expect a lot of things from him. And, you know, it's having fun to watch. And for sure, he's a great teammate, for sure.
Are you and Caro good over the World Cup arguing about who you're supporting there, whether it's Portugal or what's the rivalry there? Explain to us what you guys have been arguing about who you're backing in the World Cup.
You know, I think me and Q have a, you know, tough relationship. I think we got to be back and forth for each other. You know, no matter which team we pick, the other guys always got to pick the other team or the other guys. We just want to have a discussion all day. And, you know, I think we love that battle. And Erger is a great guy. And, you know, I love having him here. And, you know, I feel he obviously Cuban like me, and we got a lot of things in common. So, you know, we just like the debate and talk about whatever we got that day.
But he's an Argentina guy, and you're with Portugal. Is that the way it is right now?
Yeah, that's the way it is right now. You know, it's just because Messi and Ronaldo. So he really like Argentina and Messi, and I really love Argentina and Messi too. But you know, he chose first this time, and you know, I had to take the other guy. So that's how it works between me and him.
Have you had a chance to enjoy any American football and the Bears? Being in the city, have you looked at the Bears or followed the Bears at all?
I think that's the only bad thing I have. In Chicago, then I'm a Viking fan. And
oh, what? Wait a minute,
yeah,
now.
I know.
Miguel.
I know. That was way before I get here in Chicago, though. But I love the Bears. I went there last year for opening night when they played the Vikings also. And then, you know, I love the whole Bears organization, the way they carried for last year. And all that Kelo do last year was fun to watch, for sure.
How did you become a Vikings fan?
Oh, that's a long story, but yeah, one of my teammates, former teammates in minor league with the Dodgers, Michael Bush, we did a fantasy together in 2022, I guess. And then, yeah, he's from Minnesota. He invited me to Minnesota that year for watch a game. And, you know, I really like it, have fun there. And that was the first time I watched football. So that's how it all started.
All right, so really the only flaws for Miguel Vargas are the fact that he's a Vikings fan and he backs Cristiano Ronaldo over Lionel Messi. Otherwise, everything else is perfect as far as my point of view goes. So, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for City Connect Fridays. Catch the team in the iconic uniforms every Friday night and shop the full collection at the team store. For more information, head to whitesox.com/city. Whoa, city. Careful there, Meller. When we come back, great conversation Len had last week on our Sunday Spotlight with Mike Farron about the White Sox draft choices. We'll do that right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly. We are getting ever closer to the Major League Baseball draft, a few weeks away now. Len Casper had a fantastic conversation last Sunday with MLB Network Radio, Mike Farron, on some of the possibilities for the White Sox.
I would say it's fairly top heavy, and I think the biggest overlying thing is we thought this was going to be a really good draft, I think, for the most part, because high schoolers that didn't get picked in 23 on paper looked like it was going to be a great draft with all of the COVID kids that went to college because it was only a 5-round draft in 20, and so you had this great college class with an historic high school class behind it. And this year, those players that were in college, the high schoolers, they haven't really taken that step forward that I think many people thought they were. So there are three really, really good players in this draft, and then it starts to get a little bit cluttered from 4 to, I would say, maybe 50, which is interesting, and it doesn't mean that there aren't going to be good players later in the draft. It's just that there's less clarity at the top.
So let's talk about the two shortstops, the two names that come up a lot. One is a high school shortstop, Emerson, and then Chalowski, the UCLA shortstop.
So I think Chalowski has obviously been the name that I think most Sox fans have heard a lot about, and he is an incredibly polished player. Baseball life or family, dad's a cross-checker for the Reds. He grew up in Phoenix. He could have had first or second round money coming out of high school. decided to go to college and then performed as a finalist for the Golden Spikes Award and has been a tremendous player on what was the best team in the country, wire to wire, this season until they were eliminated in a regional. He's a no-doubt shortstop. He doesn't have anything that you look at that goes, man, that's a wow tool, but he does everything really well. And I think he gets a lot of comparisons to Dansby Swanson, and I think that that's fair in that, you know, he's got some power. He can really play defense. He's not maybe a burner on the bases, but he makes really smart decisions, and he's a really solid player all around. Is going to be a solid big leaguer, most likely. Grady Emerson is the player that has more upside, and he's the prep shortstop from Fort Worth Christian. He's a left-handed hitter. There is power potential there. I remember seeing him last year at the Perfect Game National Showcase, and he stepped in the box, and I said, what is Stephen Drew doing here? Because that's physically, he kind of looks like Stephen Drew. He's extremely confident. I think there's some questions as to whether or not third base might be an eventual spot for him if it's not shortstop. But the upside with him is super high, and I think he probably has the highest ceiling of the players at the top of the draft. And
then that was Mike Farron with Len Casper last week. There's more on that regarding Vaughn Lackey, which, don't worry, we've got a couple weeks where I will promise that we will bring that back for you. You'll get to hear that, but it was a great conversation and just something to mull over. It is not necessarily rock or bust like everybody, I think, originally thought it was going to be. There are a couple of players who are in the mix for the White Sox. That's going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly, but have no fear. I'm not going anywhere, White Sox fans. We've got White Sox baseball coming your way here. Game 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Tigers coming your way. First pitch at 12:10. Pre-game show officially starting at 11:30. Thanks to Jake Santos and Brendan Riley. I am Jeff Meller. Talk to you here in a couple of minutes with your White Sox pregame show on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.